This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.
Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to Screen Talk. Now I'm going to crack on with this show with a song. I watched the documentary in the last couple of days, Supersonic. I'm not a Oasis fan, but I really enjoyed the documentary. I'm going to chat to James Gill in a sec. We're going to talk about rock docs and the ones that we like, the ones that maybe we don't. But even as a non-Oasis fan, I really enjoyed this documentary. And one of the highlights from the film was this this little section where Noel talks about how he came about writing this song. It is Talk Tonight.
Sitting on my own, chewing on a bone, 1,000,000,000 miles from home, when something hit me somewhere right between the eyes. Sleeping on a plane, you know you can't complain.
With talk tonight. James Gill is with me in the studio. James is, of course, the magpie of film news and tidbits. Is it, we discussed whether it's tid versus tit, didn't we?
And we definitely went with tid.
We went with tid. James, you've seen Supersonic, the Oasis documentary.
Yes,
and
I
that
have.
Song is quite a sad song.
Yeah.
That was from probably my favourite anecdote of the documentary, where Noel, after a disastrous gig in LA, their first attempt at cracking America.
And crack is the right word.
Yeah.
That is what they
I didn't realise they were quite
that,
doing quite so much crack.
On.
Was it? It was meth, wasn't it?
Yeah,
they
it
were
was,
doing.
It was meth.
They were doing shitloads of meth. The show went terribly. Liam got a bit angry, which is unlike Liam, and the whole show was a disaster. They've got footage of how bad it was
going. I've
never
seen that before.
No, me neither.
And I didn't know that that incident happened.
And then
Noel
just did,
disappears to
did
San Francisco.
Yeah.
Stays with a girl and writes a modern masterpiece.
One of the best songs. Now, I'm not a huge Oasis fan. In fact, I'd even go as far to say I sort of dislike them. I mean, I like some of their songs. You know, Noel Gallagher's written some great songs, but I've just always had a problem with Liam Gallagher. I can't buy into a front man that sings like he wants to fight you. That's just not a style I've ever really been into. But this doc, I love rock docs anyway, though. Like, even with bands I'm not that into, I still enjoy seeing the journey, the, you know, all the sort of the successes, the highs, the lows, all that sort of stuff. But it didn't change my opinion of Liam Gallagher at all.
Okay. Well, I would say that while the rest of the British public back in the 90s and noughties were loving Oasis, you and I were obviously loving Pearl Jam. So
I did love the Britpop scene as well.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
I liked both. I was into, you know, I've always been someone that's liked every style of music. I'm a huge Blur fan. I think
you look like a Blur fan.
Do I?
Yeah.
I hope
not a compliment.
No, but I like bands that know how to evolve and change and
sure.
try new things
yeah.
and not just sort of plot out the same thing all the
Absolutely.
Time. And I think they're clever. And you look at Damon's output outside of, I was going to say Oasis, which is still true. when you look at his output outside of Blur, he is, I mean, I think the man's somewhat of a genius.
Yeah,
you know, everything he does
yeah.
is either a creative or commercial success
yeah,
on a massive. And, you know, the documentary about Blur when they got back together was so heartwarming and so beautiful. And I don't know if you saw the Stone Roses one that Shane Meadows, well, you weren't into this scene, but there was, again, the Stone Roses one was so wonderful. There's a scene where they first rehearsed together, the four of them back together after like 20 something years, and I wanted to cry. They play Waterfall, and it's like I was a grown man that was like, this is, you know, bringing me
yeah,
back
yeah.
to my youth. But with I didn't have any of that kind of attachment with Oasis, but I still really enjoy it. I mean, there's nothing better than watching a good rock doc, wouldn't you say?
I thought it was terrific. I enjoyed it a great deal. It was tinged with sadness. And I say that on behalf of, I don't know their mum, I don't know them, but for their mum, it is heartbreaking that her two sons don't get on. I mean,
that seemed
that
to
is,
be what the film was really about,
really
was
is,
the fact
it's
that these two brothers.
About a relationship between,
yeah.
between two brothers.
And I find Noel an intriguing guy. I'd love to interview him. I think there's something about him where he's really clever and sensitive and, you know, got a really interesting outlook. And he's a talented songwriter.
But there's also fire in the
belly. there's that, you know, that angst. And I'm intrigued by him. I really am.
I didn't realise that he's. I don't think this is a criticism, but I didn't realise that his ego was as voracious as it perhaps is until I watched that documentary.
Yeah.
And I felt that came across.
But also their reasons for getting into music. He was always this slight, sort of slightly geeky guy playing his guitar. And Liam hated bands and music. And then
sure.
one day went, I want to be in a band. And it all seems so for
well,
the wrong reason.
He banged his head, didn't he? He got his head banged in a fight. And that sort of like changed his outlook.
But it is weird. There was, for years, I used to think, did they deliberately, because they broke up around the time that Blur got back together, and I was like, have they seen just how amazing that, you know, what do you call it? Reunion.
Reunion,
there's the word I was looking for. Have they seen how successful that was and how much people have taken them back into their hearts and gone, maybe we need to break up and then get back together?
I mean,
but watching this documentary, I definitely like, no, this is a real, you know, angsty, turbulent relationship with two brothers, and
I mean, the film finishes at the Nebworth gigs,
yeah.
and it actually left me wanting more. I want another documentary because I want to know what happened
yeah.
when they went to America, and they could have possibly cracked America, and Liam decided that he wanted to buy a house. and left America there and then. I think even at the airport.
Really?
Yeah, and they had to do their America gigs without their frontman, and so Noel had to obviously do all the singing. And that sort of cost them... That cost them the US in a way.
Well, that's the other thing.
There's so many stories still to tell.
I prefer Noel's voice to Liam's. I never got the...
Liam. I love the snarl and the swagger. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't... You know, it all just sounds too much like a John Lennon impression to me.
I mean, and it is.
You know, but I don't know. That's just my taste. I do like... When Noel sings their songs more than when he does.
It's more soulful,
I hope I don't
it?
Bump into Liam because he'd probably headbutt me.
There's every chance. But I'm with you on the music docs. I'm a sucker for a music doc.
Well, have you got some favourites?
Yeah, so I would say there's a documentary called Dig, which is joyous. Please check it out. It's all about the friendship and then bitter rivalry between the Dandy Warhols and the Brian Jonestown Massacre. Mm-hmm. And what happened was that the Jonestown Massacre were tipped for great things. But, I mean, if you think Oasis have got an ego, I mean, just check these guys out. And what happened was the Dandy Warhols exploded and became this global mega group. They're very popular over here in the US, in Australia. And then, meanwhile, the Brian Jonestown Massacre just imploded with drugs, with onstage fights. I mean, if you think that LA scene in the Oasis doc is incredible, but there's a scrap that you can't believe is happening. They invite a load of industry down. I mean, this happens early on. I'm not really spoiling anything. They invite a load of industry down for this potential career-making gig and end up having a full-blown punch-up on stage. I mean, if it could go wrong, it goes wrong. But that's a really... And I watched that on an aeroplane. And have you found that airlines now show movies that you can't quite believe they show on aeroplanes anymore?
100%, like Flight.
Flight is on there. Like, what on earth?
Are you thinking?
But anyway, check out Dig. That's terrific. Running Down a Dream, the Tom Petty doc. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that. Oh, that's a good one. I'm going to check that out.
And then a recent one, the Ron Howard directed or produced 8 days a Week about the Beatles.
Yeah.
And that is purely about their touring years. And I tell you what, I mean, there's a long-running gag in this country that Ringo Starr can't play the drums.
Which is nonsense.
Absolute gibberish. Watch the documentary. Ringo Starr doesn't play the drums. He attacks them. It is phenomenal.
Well, you know,
he's so good. The way he just pounds these drums.
There's a clip on YouTube, if you can find it. Just type Ringo Starr drumming Dave Grohl or, just type that. I'm sure it will come up. But it's like all contemporary drummers.
And they're just saying this
And they're
guy.
All talking. And they're all like trying. They've got his kit in front of them. And they're all talking about his style. And that there's no one else.
Live on air, I'm getting pro Ringo goosebumps.
Are.
Check that
pro
out.
Pro Ringo. They literally do his swing and his sort of late rhythm.
He does have this swinging arm, that's right.
Because he's left-handed. And it just by the end of it, you're like, Ringo's the greatest drummer that's ever lived.
But I wonder why that is a thing, though. But I got to interview Ron Howard about that documentary, and we talked about Ringo and how modest the Beatles are as well. Because any other band, given what they achieved, would be a lot more forthcoming. Mm-hmm. But the Beatles could never quite explain what it was about them that made them so special because they're such modest, humble guys. Mm. But that's out on Home Ents now, and I would strongly recommend that. Eight days a week.
Some of my favourite rock docs
you
or documentaries.
Anvil on there.
Of course, Anvil's on there.
Oh, my
which
God.
Is taking the slightly more like comedic.
But also heart melting.
I mean, probably the most heart melting one of recent years is Searching for Sugarman.
To the extent where you can't believe.
It's real.
Yeah, no.
Well, I didn't know. And
I didn't have a clue.
I'm ashamed to say this as a music fan. I didn't know about him, about Rodriguez.
No.
And I, again, watched this on a plane. And we all know that planes have... They just make a good film even better.
What
and
is
bad
that
films
it's true.
Watchable.
It's so true.
I don't know what it is.
It's a new podcast. true.
Films on planes. Do you know what? I am so pleased I didn't know about the artist in the Searching for Sugarman, and almost think if you do know about it, the film kind of doesn't. I mean, it's still probably enjoyable, but surely it doesn't work to the same extent. Because when the moment comes when the big reveal, I was like nudging the stranger next to me on the plane, going, "Can you believe this? This can't be real." some other ones I love. There was a three-part documentary on the BBC called The Complete History of Hip Hop, which is amazing. Even if you're not a hip hop fan, it's just fascinating to see that they can trace back to even the building that hip hop began in.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, it began in the Bronx and there was a very specific area right. where people started, you know, putting turntables together and breakdancing and stuff. And it took how long it took to take over the mainstream and stuff. That's a really good one.
Where can we watch that? Is that on iPlayer or something?
I don't know, actually. There's another one that was on iPlayer that I don't know where you'd get hold of, a documentary about two Scottish kids who pretended to be American in order to sort of make their whole outfit more authentic or more real.
And those kids grew up to be... The Proclaimers.
What a big hip hop group that we and they ran with this. They got a record deal. They released music rapping in American, but then they had to start going to meetings and things and keep up the American accent. It's a brilliant doc. Again, I can't remember what it's called.
Nice.
Sound City. Have you seen that?
No.
That's a great. Dave Grohl produced and fronted about all the amazing albums that were recorded in this studio in LA.
Well, one that you would love, and I'm sure you must have seen, is Pearl Jam 20, the documentary about Pearl Jam.
Only a few times.
And the most beautiful thing about that is that it's actually... the reason why the ending isn't great is because they end up as a very happy band.
Yeah, so, but they went through some... Not many bands have had people die at their concerts and things like that, you know.
But then like the last third is basically everything's fine.
Everything's good now, but it's a lesson in like playing the long game and not chasing the quick fix fame and all that
100%.
Stuff. 100%. What else? Like, there's a Fleetwood Mac documentary. I mean, if you want something with
that's
all the
a great
drama
documentary.
Of like cocaine and effects. They've all
drugs,
basically fucked each other.
They have, yeah.
That's the crazy thing. And they're all in love with each other. And it's like, and yet they still play. It's so cool. I just want there to be a Milli Vanilli documentary.
Oh,
we're due one, aren't we?
That's a great... Hang on a second. Directed by Mr. Dan Clark.
There you go.
I'll be all over that. And the Oscar goes to...
Because it's tragic as well. Because one
tragic.
Of them died, I think.
One of them died.
Yeah. They both... Depression...
It's a phenomenal story.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal
And with
story.
All due respect, I mean, obviously those two carried the can... There were people behind that that manoeuvre.
That machine.
That has Academy Award written all over it. Milli Vanilli documentary.
And Girl, You Know It's True.
Girl, You Know It's True. And that came out. I mean, my world changed forever.
Baby, don't forget my number.
And I'll tell you what, I mean, I'm doing it now. I'm dancing now. But the moves that they were rocking were, I mean, they're not the only... I mean, for God's sake, I think I can say this without getting sued. I mean, the Monkees weren't always playing their instruments and...
Yeah, but I think it's different to...
I know Milli Vanilli was a mass hoodwink. But what I am saying is that, I mean, actually, it takes me to another documentary, 20 Feet from Stardom.
Oh, beautiful.
Which is pure shivers.
Yeah, that's good.
But I mean, that is another example of...
So that's a documentary about all the...
The great backing singers.
Great backing singers.
Whose vocals were used because they were such... profoundly talented singers, and then those vocals were then given to bands who couldn't sing a lick, and so these backing singers who didn't have much money would hear their vocals being played on the radio under the name of another band, which isn't a million miles away
from the woman that sang on all the sort of Motown Christmas records.
That's right,
and really sad. But when they play the Stones, it's not Painted Black, is it?
It's Just a Shadow Away.
That is just
Give Me Shelter.
It's just remarkable when they play that, and how amazing a performance. And I doubt she got paid other than a studio fee or something.
Who's the very famous singer who she couldn't make money from singing, had to become a cleaner, and was singing while she was cleaning? And whoever owned the house said, "Oh, you sound like was it Martha?"
It might be. I can't remember.
Some amazing stories. But that's I think that's on Netflix. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, Rock Dogs, they're great. When they're good, they're great. So have you got any film news for us this week?
Yes.
I'd love it if you went, no.
Dan, we're too close. We're in too deep right now. I would never let you down. So I'd like to talk about Arrival, which, given it's November, I think I can safely say this. That for me, is the... I don't like it when Robbie Savage says "for me," but I've just done it. Yeah. For me, Gary, that is the film of the year. I think it's a wonderful film, and if you haven't seen it, please go see Arrival.
Don't you hate it when people say it's the film of the year when it's like March?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're like, well,
come on, mate, give the year a chance. So this is a classic example of, you know, the actors are all very good in it, and it's but this is a triumph of storytelling, and that director Denis Villeneuve. If you could,
is that how you pronounce it?
It's how I'm pronouncing
it's
it.
It's definitely. Okay.
I'm going with as in Jacques Villeneuve.
Yeah, and what about his first name?
Is it Denis?
I think it might be. You know,
I mean, I want to sing Blondie, but I can't. So Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
If you could buy shares in a director, you would stick your house on this guy.
I love the way you speak sometimes.
Thanks very much. I'm so passionate about this guy.
Can you buy shares in a director?
No, you can't. No, you absolutely cannot. No,
but it's a good idea.
But if you could, then I would.
Trump will bring that in.
Well, his next movie is the Blade Runner sequel.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what.
So it's in safe hands. Look, not only prisoners.
I'll tell you what, mate. It's not only is it in safe hands, they're lucky to have him.
Yeah, Prisoners.
Yes.
Sicario.
Yes.
Arrival, which I've not seen yet, but everyone's raving about.
I would
about.
Say Arrival, I mean, is his best movie.
Really?
And it's all about. I don't want to spot. What I would say as well is. So I'm trying not to talk about the storyline. Mm. I would urge you not to read reviews, because some reviewers do end up being a bit spoilerish with a little turn of phrase, and it gives too much away. So all I would say is it's a beautiful film. It's about life itself. Don't be put off by the fact that it's about what if aliens visit Earth. That is merely a jumping off point.
Okay.
It's a
film.
Well,
that's good to know, because when I saw the trailer, I was a bit like, well, we've seen that film like 100 times.
So for example, my wife, as soon as anything is fantastical, she is, and good night, yeah. I am out.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
In this instance, you'll be doing yourself a disservice. I think this will be remembered.
Don't get me wrong, I like an alien landing on Earth story.
I know you
it's
did,
just
yeah.
how many, like Contact, I think, is a really underrated movie. Do you know it?
I do know it. It is underrated.
Yeah.
And I love the ending
for a reason.
As well. No, absolutely. So I would say this is a film that stays with you, and I think in years to come, this will be remembered as a modern masterpiece.
Okay.
Now, the film it's knocking off the top spot for me this year is Hell or High Water, which I, again, adore.
Yeah, yeah.
But Arrival, you know, if I could give it 5 popcorns out of 5, then I would do. So that would be my...
Yeah.
If you've got,
and it came out this... Friday, just gone.
Yeah. So if you've got £12 or £15 burning a hole in your pocket, go see Arrival this weekend.
Okay. Is everywhere now £12 or £15?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Even outside of the... You go to the West End, it's like you buy 2 tickets and it's like £50
it's
or something.
It's insane.
Yeah. Glittering West Ham.
But if you take your missus, sorry, I turn into a husband from the 1950s there. Certainly, I'll bore and chank. No, but if you take your loved one to a film, you are staring down the barrel of 50 yeah. sheets in central London.
Okay, what else have you got?
So Gavin O'Connor, who I think is a director of considerable talent, I really enjoyed The Accountant.
The Accountant.
And
what else has he done?
Warrior, which is also well worth
yeah.
a watch.
And
he is taking on the Green Hornet. Now, as you know, I am Captain Positive and don't like to say anything negative.
You say that every week and
then
say
something horrendous. Hey, the thing about me is I'm really positive, but I hate the following things. No, I thought that was a real misfire for Seth Rogen, the 2011 mm-hmm. Green Hornet.
I don't think you're alone in thinking that.
I know,
though,
but I really wanted to like it, and my, the bee in my bonnet with those guys is bad improv, and it's an assumption that, hey, we're so hilarious, if we improv our way through it, it'll be a masterpiece. And there are some scenes in that film that I can't prove it, but let's just say they smack of bad improv, and I really did not like that movie at all. But I do think Gavin O'Connor, I think the accountant is such a muscular and action-packed movie with substance that I do think that he's probably the right guy for the Green Hornet, because
okay.
it tends to be a darker take on it rather than the attempted chuckle fest that Rogan
yeah.
went for.
Well, they went for a more sort of Batman TV series, you know, like the
yes,
60s Batman series type.
Now,
thing,
I don't think Kato has been cast yet, but Iko Uwe from the Raid movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why that guy isn't one of the biggest movie stars on the planet? Have you seen Raid 1 or 2?
I haven't, no.
Oh, my. You've seen it, my friend, haven't you? Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll watch those films and you will think, why is this guy not... that guy should be like the new Jackie Chan.
Mm-hmm.
He's a profound talent.
Talking of which,
when martial arts are done well, though, do you not think it's just like
oh
the
yeah
most
absolutely it's a
spiritual
it's
uplifting
like
thing you can see.
He got an honorary Oscar this week, didn't he? Jackie Chan
deserves it.
Yeah, it always feels a bit. What isn't, you know, like an honor? It's not quite winning, is it? It's more like,
well, I'll tell you what, you say that. Have you ever seen the YouTube clip of Charlie Chaplin
yeah.
receiving his...
But
I mean,
you know, that's because it has all the weight and the complicated
of the
history
communism
and all that
the,
stuff.
If you've not, I'll tell you what, listener, go on. If you've not seen that, go on YouTube. I think we've talked about this before, haven't we?
What, the Charlie Chaplin
yeah.
one? I don't think we have.
Right, well, you know, you hear people use the phrase bravo.
Yeah.
But I've never actually...
Oh, maybe you have.
Maybe
yeah.
I have, but
yeah,
this
yeah.
is an example of people
actually
quite literally screaming bravo for Chaplin. And
yeah.
it's very special. Oh. But like Hitchcock never won an Oscar, but got an honorary
yeah,
Oscar.
Yeah, which is like insane to me. Cause,
it is insane.
You know,
Cary Grant never won an Oscar.
Oh. Poor Carrie.
It's for another show, this, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, we're going... We've sort of run out of time, I'm afraid, my friend.
Do we have very quickly the time for the Kong Skull Island trailer?
Oh, go on then, yeah, quickly, because even I was blown away by this.
So it starts off very moody, almost Apocalypse Now-ish.
I'm not sure everyone can keep up with your train of thought here.
So it's you sound like my wife. this one is set in the 1970s.
No, what is it you're talking? You
just Kong, yeah, Skull Island.
Okay, right. Maybe I'm the one that's deaf.
We are like a married couple. Kong Skull Island, it's set in the 1970s. The trailer starts off, feels very 70s. Tom Hiddleston, I think, is rocking a Steve McQueen in The Great Escape look, because the blue he wears is the exact same blue, it's a very specific blue, that Virgil Hiltz wears in The Great Escape. So that's my anorak, that's my spotter's badge, okay? And then it starts off very serious, and there's Kong on the island, and you think, well, this looks very serious. And then John C. Reilly appears, and this is not an insult because it made me laugh, and he looks like he's been choppered in from a different movie.
Choppered, though, so quite, still there's a
theme. I mean, there's a theme there. Yeah. But he's playing it for gags, and it's a wonderful trailer. So it sort of takes this tonal shift once Reilly appears.
Yeah.
So I tell you what, I mean, I went from thinking of... I mean, that film, it was on my radar, but now it's... I must say that trailer's done its job, because that's become, like, must-see.
Well, I think just the blending of a Kong film set in the Vietnam era is a really interesting and to kind of shoot it a bit like it looks from that time as well. Yeah, I'm excited about it. Well, James, thank you so much.
God bless you, my friend.
We have a brilliant guest coming up. This is a wonderful actor, comedian, writer. His name's Greg McHugh. You will, of course, know him from his creation and appearances as Gary Tank Commander Howard in Channel 4's Fresh Meat. And of course, everyone remembers him as Charlie Babbitt in How Not to Live Your Life.
That was the role.
He has picked a couple of songs. This is his first song. It's a beautiful piece. I think we call it Theme de Camille. And it appears in the film Casino. He's coming right up. James, thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Mate.
Greg,
hi.
Thanks for depressing us with that piece of music.
I know, I was going to say, yeah.
Sometimes a piece of music, especially classical or a piece of score, yeah. can, you know, it goes in different journeys. So you always listen to the first half of it and think, oh, it's this big rousing, and then it just sort of trails off into this kind of somber,
yeah,
low beat.
When you go in touch saying, can you choose a piece of music from a film? I just thought, well, I'll choose just a nice piece of music from a film I really like, from Casino. But now that I've just listened to it, that was a massive mistake. really massive mistake.
There are no mistakes on this show. Why did you pick it, though? What is it about it you love? Is it the film or the
Scorsese
music?
I think Scorsese uses pieces of music that are just a bit left field and a bit odd.
Mm.
So rather than reinforcing the point, like all the time with kind of music that you think would instantly suit that scene, he uses this kind of mesmeric classical piece of music at the end of something about Vegas. It's the least bit of Vegas music you could possibly have. But I just found that every time I listen to it, it's very moving, and it's in contrast to like the high impact violence of the film itself. So there you go. That's what
I've not seen Casino in so long.
Oh, I'm so excited that you've not seen it for ages, because then you can go back and watch it.
I need to rewatch it.
It's a masterpiece.
Is it?
The opening shot is like one continuous shot for like, I think it's 2.5 minutes through the casino itself. It's beautiful. I'm excited. When are you going to watch it?
Well, what are you doing after this?
Well, it's about 3.5 hours long.
We haven't got time. I just remember when it came out that people were like, oh, it's a bit like Goodfellas in a casino, but maybe having time away from it, it might be fair to rewatch it. And
well, I mean, it's got Joe Pesci and Ray Liotta. Ray Liotta's not in Casino, and De Niro. But so in that respect, I mean, it's
they're
a little
all
bit
killing each other.
Well, they are
wearing suits,
but
yeah, that's
no. It's still brilliant.
Yeah,
I'd recommend
it is brilliant. I'd like to. I'm going to do that. Thanks very much for coming in.
You're
Greg.
Welcome.
See you later.
Thanks for having me, guys. Cheers.
So, look, huge congratulations on the success of Gary Tank Commander.
Thanks, man.
Now you have just played, haven't you? At some massive venues.
We just played the Hydro in Glasgow, to 10,000 people a night, which was slightly.
How many nights?
We did 3 nights of that. So it was
that's
pretty
incredible.
Nuts. Yeah, it was. It was bizarre, and if people can see my highlights and my hair, that's from
why.
Show, not a decision, although I quite like them, if I'm being honest.
And also, really, you create the character as an excuse to be able to dress like that, right?
Just to dress like that.
Yeah.
Just to get the army uniform on. Yeah, that was 16, 17 months in the making.
Really? That's a long time, isn't it?
Well, from the decision made that we were going to do it to the actual show, and a lot happened in between that time as well, so it was mammoth in every respect.
What happened there? You smiled like there was a story in your mind it's like, what's come on? What do you need to
it's
get
been
off
a
your
few t- months. Basically, when we committed to the show, I just had a baby, which was we hadn't even had a baby yet. So that was a bit of a pressure. And then we put the show on sale. It sold okay, but didn't sell out every single night instantly. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing, so we knew there was going to be a lot of work to do in terms of promoting the show, etc. And then I broke my ankle very badly in March of this year, a double break, tibia fibia, dislocated it, big operation, etc., with only 6 months to go to the live show.
Did you change the dates?
No.
No.
We had to keep the dates. So the pressure was on for me to recover from the ankle and write the show whilst in plaster.
How do you
and promo the show?
How do you like sort of accelerate recovery of a broken, like were you just like going, just do nothing. I'm still doing too much.
Well,
less.
There was a phase of you can only do nothing for 3 months or let it recover, and then I had an amazing help of the NHS in Brighton team who just helped me out so much.
You were like like an athlete, weren't you?
I was.
You needed to get ready for your big event.
Do you know what? I had to. And then just before the show, I went to see the consultant that had done the operation, and he said, you've snapped one of the pins in your ankle that holds the main juncture between the
main
two bones.
Foot.
Yeah, in my foot. Yeah, I'm going to get really medically complicated here. So I knew it was snapped, so I didn't know what effect that was going to have on the live show. So it's just been a bit of a time. Anyway, the shows went very well. The crowds were fantastic, and we did it.
How did you? At what point did you know that that creation was as big enough to sell out such big?
We didn't. Genuinely,
so you went
we
like,
didn't.
What's the biggest venue we can book? And they're like, well, let's wait and see if you can sell it. Nope, I want the biggest.
Well, this is what happened. Mick Perrin, the producer,
Mick Perrin.
Who had produced Gary Tank Commander 10 years previous when I was doing 50-seater in the Gilded Balloon, not even remotely selling that out, decided that he would produce this show in the Hydro. The Hydro said, do you know what, I think this will sell. Mick wasn't sure, I wasn't sure. We put the tickets out. It sold well, but it hadn't been on TV for 3 years, so it was kind of bonkers. But in the end, it kind of, with a lot of hard work, paid off, I think.
And it's one of those weird things that I hope you don't mind. I hope you feel like this is fair to say that...
That I hate it. Greg.
That I hate it. Yeah. And you're cool with that?
Yeah,
no,
well.
That there's this weird thing that happens sometimes with Scottish comedy that can be a huge phenomenon in Scotland, and it can still be, like, it still does well in England, but, like, the disparity between how popular, like, things like Still Game, is like, it's popular down here, but it's massive...
We could get into this conversation in terms of what you'll probably find with when Gary came down to BBC Three was that BBC Three didn't promote it or wouldn't trail it or wouldn't support it or wasn't interested in it. Still Game had very little support. They've had more support this time round. So these Scottish shows that are a weird phenomenon in Scotland are actually often a kind of...
I sense a little bit, like, you're a bit offended by this, weird.
I think it's an odd conversation to have because actually this kind of conversation of what is Scottish comedy, what is English comedy, it's like there are two different worlds. There aren't. There are different ways that shows are supported, produced, encouraged.
Yeah, yeah.
And when one is started in Scotland and one is started in England, where there is execs and people behind the show, what you can often find is these shows in Scotland are separated when they shouldn't be. They should just be collected.
So do you feel like it almost feels no different to if the show had been created in somewhere in Europe and we're like, oh, it's an acquisition, we'll just put it on somewhere? Or
For Gary, though, I'm not speaking on behalf of other shows because I don't know their background, but at that time, and bear in mind this was years ago, was that it was put on very late at night and then they put two episodes out back to back kind of get rid of it as quick as they could. And that's absolutely...
Oh, is that what they did? They told me when they did that to me it was because they really believed in it.
Ah, right. Oh. Yeah, yeah. We're going to do a double bill for 3 weeks because we love it so much.
Yeah, yeah.
What time slot? 1 a.m. Oh, yes, yeah. Jackpot. However, that was years ago and we still had a following that allowed us to do these live shows, which is the main point, which is phenomenal and totally surreal. But I'm just very proud that I think we got to...
I'm glad you said that because I feel like sometimes we down here feel like that it's just some... Like we don't always see the mechanics behind how BBC Scotland, BBC England... Well, it's not even called it, it's just BBC.
It's which, BBC Network, but effectively it can be
But sometimes to us it looks like it's like, oh, it's because... You know, they get it more or something like that, but it's not. It's just.
Well,
it's,
I mean, some people would argue, yes, Scottish people have the better sense of humour, so it kind of it works better up there. But no, you're right. I mean, you could go on for days about how the commissioning process works.
And, I'm going
and
to
some of. Yeah, I know. This is an 8-hour show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the bottom line is, I think funny is funny.
Yeah.
Do you think funny is funny, or do you think the Scots have a different sense of humour to the English?
No, I think there's a thing that happens with all the like. Celtic countries that, and you know, anywhere outside of the M25, really, where people really get behind homegrown talent, whether it's in comedy or music or politics or whatever. People, there's a much more of a sense of pride that, yeah, we love this, and they recognise it in themselves. And you know, like obviously we mentioned Still Game, and but even like Kevin Bridges, you know, there's a real like that people love when they see one of their own doing it so well.
Yeah.
That doesn't take away from the skill and the brilliance of the show, but I think that happens. You know, not that I've watched an X Factor in years, but it was a common thing that people
behind
the, you know, Irish and Welsh and Scottish people just got so much support.
They
from
do. I think there's a definite pride and local support that you have in Scotland that is very special.
Yeah.
I did experience that at those live shows. It was quite phenomenal.
Do you do the show around the country?
No.
No.
We did those three nights almost killed me. I was very happy with how they went, and I think touring it, never say never, but no, I'm very happy that...
Did you enjoy the moment? Because I always feel like some of the best let me rephrase it, some of the biggest gigs I did where I should have gone, this is amazing, drink this in, I can barely remember that it happened.
Do you know, I did try to, on the final night, there was certainly a couple of points where I did look out and try to soak it up. You can't ever properly do that because you're playing a scene or you're... just thinking about what's coming next, or you're staring at the person in the front row who's not laughing, and that always gets in the way.
Even
a little
one
bit.
Person out of 10,000 can fuck you off, can't it?
You're still gutted, aren't you? What
can I do to win you all over?
I know, it's so pathetic, isn't it? It's so pathetic. I did as best I could to enjoy it.
Yeah. I love the political stuff you did, the interviewing the politicians and...
Oh, yeah, we snuck that in with a broken ankle. That was good fun.
Yeah, that was great. And it's weird when you think of a character that was sort of not really political in a front-footed way.
Yeah.
That can actually sort of somehow house that kind of conversation. Did you get nervous talking to... Because I've never seen you do that kind of comedy before. You've been much more like characters, and you used to do stand-up, right?
Yeah, I used to do stand-up, but never particularly good at it, but mainly kind of acting background. So, I suppose the interesting thing about Gary was that he's the confident fool, isn't he? So anything he says, he thinks he knows far more than the person opposite you. So if you get in a politician who is... you know, relatively, well, not relatively, but completely versed in their own politics and the kind of wider societal, setups, but you get them speaking to someone who thinks that they know better than them, that is quite an interesting mix.
They were all quite good. They were all, like, clever. You had clever people that didn't really necessarily warrant taking the piss out of as much. I'd like to see you with some people that... you know, deserve a little bit more of a hard time, you know.
Well, yeah.
Because I like Nicola Sturgeon and even the, I forget her name, the conservative Scottish
Davidson, girl. Yeah.
She, you know, like, she seems relatively normal. Do you know what I mean, for a politician?
I think they were all relatively normal, but of course in the edit, we got together the best bits of what they said. I mean, a few of them, you couldn't use the first 25 minutes.
Really?
It was impenetrable. Some of them were stranger than Gary to speak to. And then we just had to keep moving on to try and get little snippets. So to be quite honest with you, the edit was incredibly kind to a couple of them.
Yeah.
Whereas most of what they were saying was absolute gobbledygook, political, just monotone dribble.
What is that? Why... Do you know, we're seeing it with Ed Balls now, right? Mm. Everyone suddenly loves Ed Balls because he's making a fool of himself on national TV.
Yeah, this is classic British behaviour, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, look at Donald Trump, what's happened there. He was like, when they're doing their talk, their, like, rehearsed speak, people just don't like that. But it's so hard, to use the same word, to penetrate through that veneer.
But that was our main goal with this show. The goal wasn't really to take the piss out of them, make them look awful, because actually that'd be a lot easier. Yeah. The goal was just to try and get them to break a little bit to see who they were.
Okay.
And I think we did it with pretty much all of them, for good or for bad, is that everyone had a moment, even if it was a spontaneous laugh where you got to see, you know, Nicola Sturgeon spontaneously laugh, because you can always tell, as you say, this veneer. I think the slight difference between people having slight umbrage with Trump and then loving Ed Balls is that Trump is a buffoon who's about to run America, whereas Ed Balls is dancing about a bit on a show.
But he might come back, and then will people actually go, well, you know, I liked him on Strictly, so maybe I will vote for him.
I think they probably will.
I mean, he's certainly nowhere near the problem that we're going to face with Trump, but, you know.
No, but I suppose it's that humanising element, isn't it? That love him or hate him, I'd hope that everyone hates him, but Trump has used a rhetoric and a language that people
find... I hope none of my listeners love him.
Do you think any of them do?
Maybe.
A few closet Trumpers? do you think that's
I'm not sure. I think closet Trumper means something else, but I don't know. Would you... okay, here's a question for you.
Yeah.
What would Gary Tank Commander ask Donald Trump? And by the way, it hasn't gone unnoticed that there are some physical similarities between the two of you.
What?
Not you, Greg, but Gary. Well, there's the orange skin. The fake blonde hair.
The fake blonde hair. Do you think Gary is secretly aspiring to be Donald Trump?
I think so, in a way.
That's terrifying. What would Gary ask Donald? We did approach him, by the way, for an interview.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, we did.
Really?
We tried to get him, because he was going to be over at Turnberry at his hotel.
Was this when he did the, I'm, you know, well done for Brexit and all that, when he did that trip,
But he wouldn't see anyone, he wouldn't see most of it. In fact, I don't think he saw any of the press here, but we did try and get him. What would I ask Donald Trump, just as Gary? I'd be like, what are you all about? who are you, Donald? Donny. I think he'd call him Donny.
Is he really half Scottish?
I don't know. I think he's got... Is his family from Harris or something? The Isle.
Oh, by the way, I don't want to forget this. Because, you know, just because I knew you, I thought I should still, like, do a bit of, like, just looking up stuff about you just in case there's some amazing thing about you that I didn't know about. Yeah. And it turns out there is. And I couldn't believe they put this on Wikipedia. So there's all stuff about, you know, shows you've been in and where you grew up. And then there's just this one little fact at the very end of your Wikipedia page that says, McHugh's mother's accent is a softer variation of the Edinburgh accent.
That's just not true.
But why is that relevant?
Who wrote that? But my mum.
Isn't that weird?
My mum's from Dundee.
Okay, well, that's probably why. It's a totally different accent.
I mean, what state is someone in to go and write that on the Wikipedia page?
I'm like, why?
See, that'd be my brother.
It's got to be someone that has met you and your mum, right?
I think so, yeah.
Isn't that scary,
isn't it?
But
someone who's met me, I've said something, then my mum said something, and they went, can you excuse me a minute?
I just need to go and do something.
Yeah. That is the most... Out of all the things I thought you were going to say, that's not it.
Yeah, that was... That wasn't it.
Oh, well.
So, would you like to do more political stuff? Because I think now, more than ever, it's a juicy, ripe time to do political comedy, and we don't seem to be doing as much as in America. Would you... If the BBC or someone approached you and said, can you do more of this, would that be something you'd be up for doing?
What, more as Gary?
Yeah, or as... a different character, yourself or whatever. Like, did you get at all a bit of a buzz from doing that and thinking, I now want to take on the establishment?
Yeah, yes, no. I think if there was another opportunity to speak to, like, maybe some global figures and as Gary, that'd be interesting. Certainly, personally, would I like to go and interview Theresa May? No. Cameron? No. Not massively. My background as a performer, writer, isn't hugely political. I think the thing with the Gary interviews, it just seemed to fit that time.
That's what I liked about the show.
It was the right time, right place. It all came together very last minute. So it wasn't that hadn't been a huge aspiration. It just happened to work. And I'm slightly superstitious about doing it again. I'm quite proud of that, and I'm someone who's really happy to move on from projects once I'm pleased with them.
Well, talking of moving on from projects, you finished on Fresh Meat, right? And that's done. It's definitely not coming back.
Definitely not coming back. I think we've graduated. There was kind of talk of a film for ages, but I don't see that as happening. No. I think Sam and Jesse have got their own projects. They're very busy, and all of us are doing lots of other things.
Well, as you know, because I think I messaged you after I saw it to say how much I loved your performance in it. It was great. It was really good to see, like, a proper, like, character performance in. And how I was wondering how much of that was you and what was in the script.
You know, I'll never forget reading that first script, episode one, when my agent sent it through, and, you know, it wasn't an offer. I had to go in and meet them, and everything was on the page.
Really?
In terms of how I saw the character.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the most confident I've ever been going into a room with that character in mind. However, that wasn't replicated from the production side because I had to go and see them another five times. But I thought the writing was so brilliant. This guy was just there on the page that I found that transition quite... fairly easy because the writing was so strong. And then once the writer started writing for the cast, for me, for, you know, Jack, Zoe, Charlotte, Kim, Joe...
Keep going. I want all the guest leads as well,
Tony crew. Gardner, and all the crew, all the group. It got better and better and better.
Yeah.
So each series, I just couldn't wait to open those scripts. And, you know, I've always harped on about it, but it's the quality of writing. Well, you know, you're a writer performer. It's like, that is what makes characters, is the quality of the writer. You can improve on it, but if it's not there, if it's not on the page, it just won't translate.
So presumably you loved doing that show. And
I loved it.
Yeah.
I love everyone in it.
Yeah.
This is kind of cliche time. We became a bit of a family. Well, we did. And they're some of my best friends now. I see them really often. In fact, texting with them yesterday is like, it's a really genuinely special show. And on set, and in terms of comedy, working with people that are so generous and genuinely no one is out for their own thing, it just made the show work. So in scenes, I'm sure we've all worked with people who are slightly on their own plane, to say the least. Yeah. It just becomes a bit of a conflict.
Keep it political.
Whereas on that show, I think we just reached a point of real friendship, and that helped the comedy.
And you must have been very flattered to play a part 10 years younger than yourself.
How very dare you! How very... Yeah.
You were the John Travolta of
I was the Screech from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a massive compliment. I was the daddy of the group, and as we got to series 4, we did have to confront how old is Howard. Of course, we never found that out. But,
here's a compliment. Yeah. I even thought, actually, maybe Craig's much younger than I thought he was. Rather than going, I can't believe they cast someone, you know. But I think you did an amazing job of aging down.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it took no time at all in makeup. Yeah. I mean, it helped that Howard had a beard and... Yeah.
And he was meant to be a little bit older than everyone else anyway, wasn't he?
He was, and he never quite established his exact age. I think for his kind of setting his own ways, confident in his own slightly odd world, it suited him being older. So there you go, right? So stop saying I'm really old.
All right, sorry about that. You're not. You're a beautiful young man. What have you got coming up? What exciting things...
In the spring, or
boring things, if that's all that's...
The best boring thing that's happening at the moment is I'm not working until I kind of want to go back to work. I've got an operation on my ankle again, end of November. That's going to take a few weeks to get over that. And then series 2 of The A Word, a drama I did for the BBC, we shoot that at the end of March.
Remind me about The A Word, because that is something, sorry, I haven't seen.
Yeah, The A Word is centred around a young boy who is diagnosed with autism and how it affects the family.
Yes,
the ripples of this diagnosis, and I play his uncle Eddie, and Lee Ingleby and Morven Christie play his mum and dad, and Chris Eccleston plays my dad in it, and Vanette Robson plays my wife. And anyway, so it's just how the ripples of the diagnosis affect the family, and then we all have our own kind of storylines.
My brother's youngest son is autistic, and you know, they do such an amazing job. It's really something that I feel like an awful human being sometimes, because I'm like, I just don't know how I would cope with that. And it makes you feel helpless, because it's such a difficult thing.
It's an incredibly difficult thing. But I tell you what, Pete Bowker, the writer, again, writing, has done brilliantly, is that it's light and shade. So it's as you'll know, it's a very difficult subject area, but Pete has just written the realities of dark humour, of light humour, of just relationships, and how this rippling effect means that you can't actually live in a perpetual state of darkness and depression or difficulty. It's like, in any of this, you have to have these lighter moments. So that show, again, is just a lovely mix of some great gags, but also a kind of serious tune.
So you start shooting that next March.
And
brilliant.
Before that, I'm just happy to...
Just drinking and eating for the next couple of months.
Drinking, eating, being merry, recovering from the ankle, and then, you know, if there was a big, say, X-Men came about in January for a few weeks, something like that.
Okay, so...
Big Hollywood blockbuster, I'd do that for
Brian
a few weeks.
Brian Singer, if you're listening.
Brian.
He's around.
Big Brian.
You've seen him in Fresh Meat. He can play mutants.
Yep. Whoa! I'll take that.
Good. Just quickly, before we go into your guilty pleasure, I also must say that I loved your Edinburgh show from, like, I don't know, 8-9 years ago, Will and Greg.
Oh, thank you.
I love that show so much, and it always saddened me that you and Will never did, like, more of that, you know. I'd love to see more.
Do you know what?
I thought you two were really good together.
That year we did a pilot that Channel 4 didn't pick up in the end, and Will and I loved... That's the most fun I've ever had in Edinburgh in my life.
Yeah.
It was...
You mean during the festival, not...
Oh, no.
Ever.
I mean, during the festival, everything else is tinged with severe sadness in Edinburgh, I've got to say. But that show wasn't, because it was such a joyous thing, and Will and I had kind of written so hard on that show and reached a really fun place. We did a pilot, didn't get picked up in the end, and meanwhile went, do we want to keep doing this? And we decided just to go and do our own things for a while, but we're still really good pals.
Yeah.
And,
it was just for me, even if it's just for me.
I spoke to Will the other week and I said,
we've got to do a show for Dan Clark.
I said I'd be well up for doing another sketch show, but...
Well, listen, we've got to do this really quickly because we've run out of time. I could have chatted to you for ages, for the next 8 hours, which the show will be. So just very quickly, I'm sorry we've run out of time here, but your guilty pleasure, why don't you tell everyone what you picked?
My guilty pleasure, although it shouldn't be guilty, but it kind of is Total Recall.
Mm-hmm.
Not the remake.
That would be a not just a guilty pleasure, but a sinful...
That would be a sinful...
See, I actually liked the idea of a remake of Total Recall, because I think it's such a good story and such a good...
It is.
And that you could do a sort of Blade Runner, Minority Report version of it.
That is a really good point.
Yeah.
You could.
But
then
they didn't.
Those sets...
No.
Those sets in the original
Total
Recall. I mean, would you want to... Would you want to muck about with Arnie's eyes almost popping out and the cardboard cutout background?
And the ridiculous one-liners and the bizarre body count of people that die through
it. Incredible. It's just an incredible film, start to finish. And the one-liners are phenomenal.
Do you think, have you watched it recently? Do you think it holds up?
I think it not only does hold up, it gets better with each viewing.
Really?
It's a phenomenal film because it is...
But you know somewhere inside you that it's not a very good film. Is that what you're saying? Or
part of me understands... that there are better films.
Okay, that's a good way of putting it.
There are better films, technically, if you're going
to
break it down.
To watch every day.
Yeah, to watch every day for an eternity. However, there's something about the charisma, I think, in all the main parts in that film.
Yeah.
Sharon Stone and...
Ronnie Cox. Who's the... what's his name? He's got a brilliant name. His main henchman.
Yes, who does that role in so many...
I can't remember his name. Oh God!
Anyway, it's a brilliant film and it's a great story.
Yeah, that's a brilliant. And I remember when it came out being so annoyed that they put a spoiler, which that wasn't a word at the time, in the trailer, the woman walks through customs and then the head sort of splits apart and it's Arnie underneath. You remember
2 weeks?
Yeah, exactly. Go on.
My brother met her in Edinburgh, or claimed to meet her at a bus stop at the Edinburgh Festival. And he came back to the house and said, "Oh my God, I've just seen the lady who says 2 weeks." And I was like, "What are you talking about? Total Recall." She was at the bus stop, and I said, "Stephen, you're going crazy." And he looked her up, and the actress who did that bit was at a show.
No,
in the Edinburgh Festival.
And did her face split down the middle?
It did when she got on the bus and went single, single.
What?
And then it all kicked off.
Okay, well, look, I think it's a great choice, and it sort of got me a bit excited about watching it again. Your last of the two songs,
okay, second. It's another mistake, I'm sorry.
What are you talking about? It's not as buoyant as some of them.
I've chosen to, I think because I was just thinking of films and songs that have
Well, you wanted to pick, impact. This is from the film Highlander, which you wanted to pick as your guilty pleasure,
but sadly
we had that like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it is a good choice. But this is from that film. It's Queen Who Wants to Live Together. Together?
Yeah, do you know that Flash Air song? The Flash Air song that Mercury did, the first draft. I thought it was going to work, Freddie.
Oh, man. I think we're onto something there. Yeah. We'll re-record this just for a sitcom. Okay, well, this is Who Wants to Live Forever.
Who Wants to Live Together.
And that's not Freddie. That is actually Greg Steele. Greg, it's been such a delight talking to you.
Thanks, Dan.
Enjoy your time off. And I'll see you in another 6 or so years, yeah?
Oh, sooner.
Okay, sooner.
There's no time for us. There's no place for us. What is this thing that builds our dreams? Slips away from us. Who wants to live forever? Who wants to live forever? There's no chance for us.